Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Hunter Buchanan 2, Blood in the Dust, by William W. Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone. Narrated by Nanette Savard and a full cast. Hunter Buchanan handled the reins of the rocking and clattering Cheyenne and Black Hills stage, sitting on the hard wooden seat next to Charlie Anders. Both men had neckerchiefs pulled over nose and mouth to keep out at least some of the infernal dust kicked up by the six-horse hitch.
That coyote makes me nervous.
You mean Bobby Lee?
Anders glanced uneasily over his left shoulder. The coyote sat on the coach roof, just above and between him and Buchanan. Hunter had raised the coyote from a pup after the little tyke's mother had been killed by hunters.
Yeah, he's the only coyote aboard this heap, and that there's a thing I never thought I'd hear myself utter if I lived to be 100 years old.
No need to be nervous, Charlie. Bobby Lee ain't dangerous. In fact, he's right polite.
Buchanan leaned close to the old shotgun messenger beside him.
As long as you're polite to Bobby Lee, that is.
He grinned and nudged the shotgun man with his elbow.
If by polite you mean give him a chunk of jerky every dang time he demands one, he can go to hell. If you don't give him some, he shows you his teeth.
As if he had understood the conversation, Bobby Lee lowered his head and pressed his cold snout to Anders' left ear, nudging up the man's cream sombrero.
See there?
Anders leaned forward in his seat and regarded the coyote dubiously.
I ain't giving you no more jerky, Bobby Lee, and that's that. If I give you any more jerky, I won't have none left over for my own self, and we still got another half hour's ride into Tigerville. I gotta keep something in my stomach or I get the fan togs.
Hunter glanced over his right shoulder and saw Bobby Lee pointing his long snout in the general direction of the shirt pocket in which he knew Anders kept his jerky. The coyote's triangle ears were pricked straight up. Hunter gave the coyote a quick pat on the head.
Bobby Lee understands. Don't you, Bobby Lee? He thinks you're being right selfish. Not to mention womanish about your fan togs, but he understands.
Hunter turned forward to gaze out over the horses' bobbing heads. As he did, Bobby Lee subtly raised his bristling lips to show the ends of his fine white teeth.
See there? He just did it again.
Bobby Lee quickly closed his lips over his teeth just as Hunter glanced back again. He turned to his master with a doe-eyed look of innocence.
Oh, hell, you're imagining things, Charlie. You and your fantods and making things up. You should be ashamed of yourself.
He did, I swear.
Excuse me, gentlemen. Excuse me. Do you mind if I interrupt your eminently important and impressively articulate conversation?
Buchanan glanced over his left shoulder to see one of his two passengers poking her head out of the coach's window. Blinking against the billowing dust, Miss Laura Myers gazed beseechingly up toward the driver's box.
I'd like to request a nature stop, if you would, please.
Hunter and Charlie Anders shared a weary look. Miss Myers, who'd boarded the stage in Cheyenne a few days ago, was from the east by way of Denver. Hunter had known plenty of eastern folks who were not royal pains in the backside. Miss Myers was not one of them. She was grossly ill-prepared for travel in the west. She had not known that the trip between Cheyenne and Tigerville in the Dakota Territory would take several days, nor had she realized that stagecoach travel was a far cry from the coach and buggy and train travel that she was accustomed to back east of the Mississippi. Here, there was dust and heat, and the stench of sweat from her male travel companion, and said male's, quote, infernal and ubiquitous tobacco use. Also, the trail up from Cheyenne into the Black Hills was an ordeal of steep hills, narrow canyons, perilous river crossings, and the heavy alkali mire along Indian Creek. Once you were in the hills themselves, there were twisting, winding trails with enough chuck holes and washouts to keep the Concord coach rocking on its leather thoroughbraces until you were green with motion sickness. So far, they hadn't been accosted by owl hoots. They'd even made it through the dangerous country around the Robber's Roost relay station without being shot at, either with bullets or arrows. Indians, primarily Red Cloud Sioux, understandably miffed by the treaty the government had broken to allow gold-seeking settlers into the Black Hills, had been a problem on nearly every run Hunter had been on in the past year. He'd started driving for the stage company after his family's ranch had been burned by a rival rancher and the man's business partner. His two brothers had been murdered, and his father, Old Angus, seriously wounded. He wanted to say as much to the lady staring up at him now from the coach's left side window, but he knew she'd have none of it. She was a fish out of water here, and in dire straits. He could see it in her eyes. She was not only road-weary, but world-weary as well.
Hold on, ma'am. I'll pull these cayuses to a stop at the bottom of the next hill.
She blinked in disgust and pulled her head back into the coach.
Thank you, Mr. Buchanan.
Now, Charlie, she's new to these parts. I reckon you'd have a hell of a time back east your own self. Hell, even in Denver. I hear it's pretty citified now.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't go back east. Not after seeing the kind of haughty folks they make back that way.
Charlie drew his neckerchief down, turned to Hunter, and grinned through his grizzled gray-brown beard.
She's hard to listen to, but she is easy on the eyes, ain't she?
They'd gained the bottom of the hill now, and Hunter was hauling back on the ribbons.
Well, I wouldn't know, Charlie. I only look at one woman. You know that.
Pshaw! You can't tell me you ain't admired how that pretty eastern princess fills out her natty traveling frocks. You wouldn't be a man if you didn't.
I got eyes for only one woman, Charlie.
Hunter, set the brake.
You know that.
Yeah, well, maybe it's time for you to start looking around for another gal. Sounds to me like you and Annabelle Ludlow are kaput. Through. End of story.
Charlie narrowed one eye in cold castigation at his younger friend.
And you only got one man to blame for that. Yourself.
Charlie removed his dusty sombrero.
Gold, flame, flame, brain, cork-headed fool. How could you let her get away?
Damn it, old man. Beat the dust off your hat on somebody else.
Hunter had asked himself that question many times in the past few months, but he didn't want to think about it now. You didn't drive a six-horse hitch through rugged terrain, haunted by desperados and Sioux warriors, with a brain gummed up by lovelorn goo. He climbed down from the driver's boot and saw that Miss Myers was trying to open the Concord's left side door from inside, her fine jaws set hard beneath the brim of her somewhat outlandish velvet picture hat, trimmed with faux flowers and berries.
It's stuck.
I'll help you there, ma'am.
She gave him a despondent look through the window. Hunter felt a sharp pang of guilt every time he looked at this undeniably pretty woman and felt, well, like a man shouldn't feel when he was in love with another gal. Hunter worked a small pine stick from the crack between the door and the frame and held it up.
See here? A twig got stuck in it somehow, fouled the latch. I do apologize, ma'am. How you doing? Not so well, I reckon.
As Hunter opened the door, she grimaced and waved her gloved hand in front of her face.
The smoke and dust are atrocious. Not to mention the wretched smell of my unwashed fellow traveler and his who-hit John, as he so colorfully calls the poison he consumes as though it were water.
Hunter helped the woman out. He glanced into the carriage to see the grinning countenance of his only other passenger, Wilfred Farley, a farm implement salesman from Chicago. He was short, with a craggy face and one broken front tooth, and wore a cheap checked suit, which seemed to be the requisite uniform of all raggedy-heeled traveling salesmen everywhere. Farley raised an unlabeled, flat, clear bottle half-filled with a milky brown liquid in a salute, and took a pull. Hunter gave the man a reproving look, then turned to the woman, removed his hat, and held it over his broad chest.
Ma'am, let me apologize.
Will you please stop apologizing, Mr. Buchanan? I'm sorry to say your apologies are beginning to ring a little hollow at this late date. My God, what a torturous contraption!
She looked at the coach's rear wheel, and for a second, Hunter thought she was going to give it a kick with one of her delicate, gold-buckled, high-heeled ankle boots. Instead, she threw her head back.
Ugh! And must you continue to call me ma'am?
Well...
How old are you?
27, ma'am. I mean, Miss Myers.
Fair. I'm younger than you are. Not by much, maybe, but I am young enough that you can feel free to call me Miss. Miss Myers, not ma'am. For God's sake, don't add insult to injury, Mr. Buchanan.
Well, I'm sorry, Miss Myers. It's just that you seemed older, somehow.
Miss Myers glared at him.
I just meant you acted older. You know, more mature. I didn't mean you looked older.
Fists tightly balled at her sides, she turned on her heel and went stomping off into the brush and rocks.
Don't wander too far, ma'am. I mean, Miss Myers, it's easy to get turned around out here.
Something nudged his right arm. He looked down to see Wilfred Farley offering his bottle to him with a grin.
No, thanks. If that's the stuff you bought at the Robber's Roost station, it'll blind both of us.
Nonsense.
Farley took another deep pull.
Damn good stuff. And I see just fine.
That's how Hoyle Gullickson lost his top knot.
Charlie Anders was climbing heavily down from the driver's boot, his sawed-off double-barrel shotgun hanging from a lanyard down his back.
What? Drinking his own skull pop?
Anders stepped off the front wheel and turned to face Hunter and the pie-eyed Chicago drummer.
No, brewing it. He sold it to the Sioux. Several went blind, and the others came back and scalped him.
Farley looked at the bottle in his hand as though it had suddenly grown fangs and a rattle.
You don't say.
Hunter looked at his boots to hide his grin. He knew the story wasn't true. Hoyle Gullickson had done time in the federal pen for selling his rot gut to Indians, and understandably didn't want to go back. When a few of them approached and tried to buy his whiskey, Gullickson refused. The potential customers grew incensed and scalped him, so now he wore the awful knotted scars in a broad, grisly swath over the top of his head. These days, he was fond of removing his hat in social gatherings, just to gauge the reactions and turn stomachs.
Speaking of skull pop, Farley, I thought I told you to stay halfway sober and not smoke around that woman.
Farley shrugged.
Chills the time.
He raised a loosely rolled, wheat-papered quirly to his mouth and leveled a defiant stare at Buchanan.
I offered to share my panther juice with her, but she turned her nose up. That offended me. So, I got the makings out and rolled a smoke.
He pointed his bottle toward where the woman had disappeared in the rocks and brush.
That pretty little bitch can go straight to hell.
He's got a point, Pard. Give me a pull off that, Farley. I could use a little something to cut the dust.
I thought you said it'd blind a fella.
Anders jerked the bottle out of the drummer's hand and swiped the lip across his grimy hickory shirt.
I've been drinking rot gut so long I'm immune to blindness by now.
Just as he started to take a pull from the bottle, a rabbit poked its head out of the shrubs just off the trail. Bobby Lee leaped from the roof of the coach onto Charlie Anders' right shoulder and to the ground. The coyote plunged into the shrubs, hot on the heels of the streaking rabbit. Charlie clutched his shoulder.
Damn that vermin! He like to have dislocated my arm. Has he no respect?
Well, that's what you get for being so tight with your jerky, Charlie.
A horrified Wilfred Farley pointed at the bottle that Charlie had dropped.
Good Lord, you're spilling good whiskey.
Hunter crouched to pick up the bottle. There was still an inch or two of rot gut remaining. Grinning at Farley, Hunter turned the bottle upside down.
Good Lord, man, are you mad?
Jehu's rules, Farley.
Hunter tossed the bottle high over the coach.
No drinking aboard the coach.
Farley shook his head in disbelief.
You're sweet on that gal. A gal runs you into the ground with every look and word. Me, I got some self-respect. No skirt's gonna push Wilfred Farley around.
Charlie Anders stared off toward where Miss Myers had disappeared.
Speaking of skirts, what in the hell is she doing out there, knitting an afghan?
Hunter glanced around, making sure no would-be highwaymen were near. He didn't like standing still on the trail like this. A moving target was always harder to attack.
Miss Myers, You all right? We best get moving, Miss Myers.
Hunter looked at Charlie, who frowned and shrugged.
Miss Myers?
He didn't want to call too loudly and risk alerting anyone in the area to their position. In addition to their two passengers, he and Anders were carrying $10,000 in payroll money for one of the many mines above Tigerville.
I best go look for her. Charlie, stay with the stage. Keep a sharp eye out. I don't like sitting out here like a Thanksgiving turkey on the dining room table.
You and me both, pard.
Hunter stepped off the trail and walked into the rocks and brush littering the base of the western ridge.
Miss Myers! Time to hit the road, Miss Myers!
He saw a deer path carved through the brush. It rose up a low shoulder of the ridge. Hunter followed it, frowning down at the ground, noting the sharp indentations of the heels of a lady's ankle boots. As the path turned around a large fir tree, the indentations of the lady's heels became scuffed and scraped. Amidst the scuff marks was a faint print of a man's boot. Instantly, Buchanan's hand closed around the pearl grips of the silver-chased Lamat secured high on his right hip. He clicked back the hammer of the main .44 caliber barrel and continued following the scuffed trail. The prints led up and over the rise, then down the other side, through tree shadows and sunlight. Hunter continued forward for another 50 feet before he stopped suddenly. Ahead, a man crouched between two aspens. He seemed to be struggling with something. There was a second man on his knees on the other side of one of the aspens. Hunter could see only the man's boot soles and the curve of his back, clad in a blue wool shirt. This man, too, was making quick, jerking movements. He seemed to be holding something down. Hunter stepped to his right, putting the leftmost aspen between himself and the crouching man. He moved slowly forward, both aspens concealing his approach from both men before him. Hunter stepped behind a tree and peered around its left side. The man on the right knelt by Miss Myers, holding her head against the ground with both of his hands pressed across her mouth. Miss Myers was kicking her legs out wildly and flailing helplessly with her arms, making her skirts flop and exposing her pantaloons. The other man, tall and skinny with long black sideburns and a bushy black mustache, had pulled his pants down around his boots and was opening the fly of his long handles, grinning down at the struggling woman.
Hold her still, Bill. I'll be hanged if she ain't a fine piece of female flesh.
Leaning forward, exposing the evidence of his lust, he grabbed Miss Myers' ankles and thrust them down against the ground. Leaning farther forward, he slid his hands up her legs from inside her dress, a lusty grin blooming broadly across his long, ugly face. He stopped abruptly, turning his head to see Buchanan striding toward him.
What the? Hey!
Hunter had holstered the big Lamat and picked up an aspen branch the size of a fence post. The broken end of the branch dropped with the man into the deep, narrow ravine behind him.
Diamond to hell!
The other man leaped to his feet, his eyes popping with fear.
No!
He raised his arms to shield his face. As Buchanan stabbed the branch into his ear. Blind with fury, Buchanan hit the man's head again and again until he lay upon the ground. Hunter dropped the club when the crackle of guns rose from the direction of the stagecoach.
Damn it.
The second rapist lay still on the edge of the cliff, dead eyes staring out of a mask of blood. Hunter used his foot to shove the body into the ravine. Hunter drew the Lamat, facing in the direction of the stagecoach.
Ah, you low-down, dirty devils! Ow!
Charlie, no!
Hunter turned to Miss Myers. She was sitting up, her fallen hair full of dirt and leaves. Her hat was gone, her dress was torn. So were her petticoat and pantaloons. Her hands seemed to be idly trying to close the flesh-revealing tears in her clothes as she stared up in shock at the Jehu. Her face pale, her eyes round and glassy. She had a bruise high on her right cheek that would become a black eye in a few hours.
Stay here.
Hunter bounded off through the forest, sprinting back in the direction of the stage road. He climbed the rise along the mountain's shoulder, ran down the other side. Beyond the shrubs and rocks, he saw men milling around the stage on horseback, dust rising. Hunter stopped and crouched between two boulders and a twisted cedar next to the trail. He could see the bodies of Charlie Anders and Wilfred Farley lying in bloody heaps on the ground beside the coach.
Where the hell's the payroll money?
One of the riders was kneeling atop the coach. To his left sat the steel-banded strongbox, its lid open, bullet-torn padlock hanging askew. Envelopes of all shapes and sizes were strewn around the box. They were tugged this way and that by the breeze.
It's not in the box?
No, it's not.
The man on horseback, tall, bearded, and wearing a black hat, looked around wildly.
Where's Buchanan?
Who's Buchanan?
The Jehu.
Buchanan's right here.
Hunter stepped onto the trail and tripped the latch to engage the Lamat's 12-gauge shotgun barrel. The rider plunged down the horse's left hip. The man in the black hat flew backward off his horse and hit the ground with half of his head missing. Hunter flicked the lever back to engage the Lamat's 44 caliber barrel. The man on the coach flew backward and out of sight. A rat-faced man struggled to aim his pistol as his horse skitter-hopped. His shot went wild, and his body bounced off the coach wheel. The sudden commotion had spooked the six-horse hitch, and now they lunged forward, dragging the locked front wheel. The wood brake broke and fell to the ground. The team tore off up the trail, pulling the coach along behind it, dust blooming in its wake. It didn't get far before it fishtailed suddenly. The whole six-horse team, still harnessed together, took off up the trail, leaving the stagecoach on its side in the dirt, wheels spinning. Another killer booted his horse through the billowing dust, leveling a Sharp's carbine. Hunter calmly aimed. The round from the Sharp's creased Hunter's cheek, throwing off his aim. But Hunter's bullet had slammed into the gunman's right arm. He dropped the rifle.
Pull out! Pull out!
He'd lost his hat, and his bullet-shaped head was pink and bald as a baby's behind. He neck-reined his horse around sharply and glared at Hunter.
You ain't seen the last of us, Buchanan!
The three other surviving highwaymen swung their horses around to follow the other man.
Hack Talon!
Hunter fired at the retreating gang. Then he had to duck their return fire. As they galloped off up the trail to the south, Hunter ran out onto the trail. His last round was a wasted shot. They were out of shotgun range. Hunter lowered the smoking Lamat. The bald man, Ike Talon, was the head of a notorious bunch of thieving killers who'd been haunting the Black Hills in eastern Wyoming and western Dakota Territory for the past year. Hunter didn't know where the gang was from. He'd heard Utah. But when they'd arrived in the Black Hills, the route between Deadwood and Cheyenne had become fraught with even more peril than before. And that was saying something. He walked to where Charlie Anders and Wilfred Farley lay in the dirt beside the coach's fresh wheel ruts. He dropped to a knee beside Charlie, a man he'd known for half of his life. Hunter's father, Old Angus, and Charlie had been drinking buddies up in Tigerville, which was the town closest to the Buchanan Ranch. Charlie and Old Angus had known each other during the war, too. Hunter had also fought in the war, but not with his father. His hunting prowess, including his stealth and knife-fighting skills, had earned him a position in a small, elite group of guerrilla fighters who'd worked mostly at night, killing Union officers and blowing up trains and munitions dumps behind enemy lines. When they'd had the ranch, now it was gone, burned to a crisp. Hunter's two brothers, dead, courtesy of rival rancher and Yankee veteran Graham Ludlow and his savage business partner, Max Cheney. Not to mention the crooked county sheriff, Frank Stillwell. Cheney and Stillwell had died bloody for their sins, but Graham Ludlow was still alive, though a heart stroke had turned him into a shell of his former self. Now, Hunter and his aging father, an ex-Confederate soldier who'd lost an arm in the War of Northern Aggression, lived in relative squalor in a seedy rooming house in Tigerville.
Oh, Charlie.
Hunter patted the dead man's shoulder. Charlie Anders was a bloody mess. He had been shot three times, twice in the chest, once in the upper left thigh. He'd lost his hat in the ambush, and his thin gray-brown hair flopped around his liver-spotted scalp in the breeze. His washed-out blue eyes glinted in the sunlight, dancing down through the pines from a faultless sky as blue as fresh snowmelt.
Crazy damn time to die. Such a nice day.
Hunter looked at the drummer, Farley. The man lay belly up, arms and legs spread as if offering himself, body and soul, to the gods above. The coat of his cheap checked suit was spread to each side, like the wings of some shabby angel. A bullet had torn a hole in the drummer's shoulder. Another bullet had carved a puckered blue hole just above his right eye. Both eyes stared skyward, bright with reflected sunlight, opaque in death. Hunter gave a start, reaching for the bowie knife sheathed over his left hip as he turned his head to look over his shoulder. Bobby Lee moved out of the brush with the dead cottontail hanging limp in his jaws. He dropped the half-eaten rabbit and looked around.
We lost a good friend, Bobby Lee.
The coyote walked slowly over to Charlie Anders. He sniffed the man's left ear, turned to Hunter as though in question.
My God!
Hunter swung around to see her standing at the edge of the trail, looking as though she'd been dragged and rolled. Laura Myers had managed to arrange her torn dress some, so the rips and tears weren't quite so revealing, but only a little. Dirt and needles still clung to her hair and in the lace along her low-cut bodice. That bruise under her eye was growing darker and more swollen. She studied the two dead men in shock, then slid her gaze to Hunter.
You all right?
She nodded slowly. That would have to do for now. Talon's men might be back. He pulled the Lamap from its holster, broke it open, and turned the wheel slowly as he shook out the five spent .44 caliber cartridges. The singular Lamat had been presented to Hunter by none other than the Confederate General Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard. The Lamat had been the general's own, designed by himself and fashioned on commission by a French gunsmith in New Orleans. After Hunter had taken a sharpshooter's bullet for the general at Shiloh, possibly saving his life, Beauregard had ordered the gunmaker to change the monogram to HB. G.T. Beauregard had handed the weapon over to the young warrior late one night in a hospital tent on one condition: that Hunter recover from his leg wound and continue killing the venal Yankees. And he'd done just that. Now that the handsome firearm was fully reloaded, he returned it to its holster. Hunter turned to see Bobby Lee lifting his leg over the man who'd been wearing the black hat when Hunter had blown him off his horse. As he inspected the other three dead killers, Hunter saw that one wasn't dead, but only gravely wounded. He was the one Hunter had shot off the stage, and he was reaching for an ivory-gripped Bisley revolver that was lying just beyond his outstretched fingers. Hunter glanced at the woman, who also stared at the surviving killer. He slid the Lamat from its holster.
Turn away.
She looked at him, frowning, as though not quite understanding.
Turn away.
She looked at the big pistol in Hunter's right hand and turned away, lowering her head slightly and closing her hands over her ears. Hunter walked over to the wounded killer, who turned his head to gaze up at Hunter. An angry grimace curled his lips back, showing two silver front teeth.
Why'd you attack the stage?
Payroll, you damn fool!
He slid his gaze to Laura.
And the woman.
You weren't supposed to know about the payroll.
The man gave a taut smile.
How'd you know about the money?
Go to hell!
You first.
Bobby Lee hurried over to anoint the dead man.
Couldn't have done it better myself, Bobby Lee.
Buchanan plucked out the spent shell and replaced it with fresh. He spun the cylinder, dropped the Lamat back into its holster, and turned to Miss Myers. She still had her back to him. Her hands were over her ears. Her shoulders shook. He looked around for the dead killer's horses. He didn't see a single one. They'd likely fled with the other men and mounts. Now that he wasn't being shot at, Hunter had time to consider their situation. It could have been worse. If two of Talon's men hadn't gone rogue and attacked Laura Myers, Buchanan wouldn't have been able to get the drop on them. Without that bit of luck, both he and the girl would have gone the way of Charlie and the drummer. Of course, he doubted that Laura would see it as lucky. In her shoes, Hunter didn't think he would either. He glanced along the trail to the south. Seeing no sign of Talon and the three others, he strode quickly down the trail to the north. The coach lay on its side in the middle of the trail. Hunter leaped up onto the coach's right side, which was now the top, opened the door, and dropped inside. He hoisted himself up and out through the same door, with saddlebags hanging over his left shoulder. He climbed up to the driver's boot and grabbed his canteen, which he'd tied by its lanyard from the wood seat steel frame. He slung the canteen's lanyard over his head and left shoulder and leaped back down to the trail. Laura watched his approach with a strange mix of fear and curiosity.
Where did those come from?
Under the seat.
You mean Mr. Farley and I were sitting on the payroll money?
That's right. It was my idea. Most owl hoots would look for it in the strong box, and it's easy to shoot off a lock. It would take a while for them to look inside the coach, and by then you might have a chance to get the better of them.
Buchanan grabbed the canteen and unscrewed the cap.
Water?
Laura shook her head. Buchanan swirled the water in the canteen.
Well, about half full. Good enough for now.
He took a sip, returned the cap, and slid the canteen out of the way behind him.
Come on, we can't stay here.
Hunter grabbed the woman's arm and pulled her along behind him as he headed along the trail to the north.
What do you mean?
The woman pulled back on her arm.
Why don't I stay here while you go for help? How far are we from Tigerville?
15 miles. I wouldn't make it on foot before dark. Besides, those killers will be back, likely soon.
Why?
They know the money's on the coach. Don't ask me how they know. Nobody was supposed to know besides the mine superintendent, the bank in Cheyenne, and me and Charlie. They must have had inside help. Which means they'll be back for it, all right.
Hunter turned to her sharply.
Why the hell are you resisting me, lady? You want to die out here?
She pulled her arm free of Buchanan's hand.
No, I don't want to die. I'm just injured and tired and scared and I just want to go home.
At the sound of approaching riders, Hunter whipped around and looked to the south.
Talon. Come on, damn it.
Buchanan started dragging Laura along again.
I told you I can't.
Look.
Hunter pointed up the trail where three hatted heads came into view near the crest of the first hill. Bobby Lee ran into the brush. Hunter grabbed Laura's upper arms and glared into her eyes.
Now you listen to me. Those are the men who attacked the stagecoach. If they catch us, they'll kill us. But first they're going to give you the same treatment those other men started to. And this time I may not be able to stop them.
Laura was momentarily stunned, and Hunter took the opportunity to pull her off the trail's right side and into the forest. He pulled her up the slope. She no longer resisted, but she couldn't run as fast as he could, so he half-dragged her at times. When they came to Snags a blowdown, he wrapped his arm around her waist and carried her over obstructions before setting her down, grabbing her wrist again, and pulling her along behind him. Halfway up the ridge, she dropped to her knees.
No, I can't. My feet, my boots.
Buchanan gazed back down the ridge. He couldn't see the riders. That was good, but they needed to keep moving.
Here.
Hunter dropped to a knee and picked up her left foot.
What are you doing?
What's it look like?
He yanked at the buttons on her high boot until they were all undone, pulled it off her foot, and tossed it over his shoulder.
No, it's my only pair of...
Hunter held up the other one.
You want to die for these boots? You can't run in them, and lady, you need to run.
He tossed the other shoe over his shoulder. It rolled several feet down the hill. Hunter gazed down the slope. Four riders were just then swinging off the trail and into the trees, climbing, batting their heels against their horses' flanks.
Damn it!
He yanked the woman to her feet and pulled her straight up the hill. There were quite a few trees between him and his pursuers, offering some cover. He couldn't tell if the riders had spotted him yet. They'd likely seen where their tracks had left the trail, but if they'd laid eyeballs on him, they gave no indication. Ahead, at the top of the ridge, lay a cap of mottled gray rock with strewn boulders offering cover. He ran harder. Laura dropped to her knees. He dragged her into a niche in the wall of cap rock. Hunter shoved the woman in ahead of him. The niche was maybe 6 feet deep. She slumped against the wall, limp as a rag, long hair hiding her face. Hunter hunkered down and slid the Lamat from its holster. He held the revolver barrel up in front of his chest, doffed his tan Stetson, and leaned his head to one side, edging a look out over the slope. The four riders rode abreast, roughly 15 feet apart. They were coming hard, their horses lurching off their hind feet, the killers jouncing in their saddles, flapping their elbows. Hunter saw that the second rider from the left was Ike Talon, a big, bald-headed, dark-eyed, dark-faced man riding low in his saddle, letting his wounded right arm hang straight down his side. He bared his teeth from the agony of his wound. As the four approached the caprock, they reined up and looked around. The brims of their hats half-shaded their hard, unshaven faces. Hunter slid his head back into the niche, his heart beating in his ears. The killers were close enough that Hunter could smell the sour stink of their sweaty bodies mixing with the musk of their blowing horses.
That must be Talon. Bet that bullet shattered his arm bone.
The riders spread out, moving their mounts to within feet of their hidey hole. Hunter moved as silently as he could, far back into the niche, and hunkered down next to Laura. He looked at her and put a finger to his lips. She stared back with wide, tear-filled eyes. A shadow loomed on the boulder at the entrance to the niche. Luckily, the space Hunter and Laura were in angled back away from that boulder.
Just keep riding. You've lost him. Go back to your snake pit. Tomorrow's another day.
Come on!
Buchanan cautiously crept back to the entrance and looked around the sheltering boulder. The killers were continuing on up the slope to the south of the caprock. He stood and turned to Laura.
They're gone.
She didn't look at him. He stepped back to her and knelt.
We have to keep moving.
Leave me.
No.
She lifted her chin and pushed her hair back from her bruised and dirty face.
I'm too exhausted. I'll stay here. Come back for me later.
Nope. I might not get back here before morning. There's wildcats and grizzlies in these parts, not to mention human predators. We're going together.
Hunter stood and tugged on her arm.
Come on. Let's go.
She yanked her arm out of his hand and rose unsteadily to her feet.
I told you to leave me here. I don't care how large and brutish you are. You can't force me to do something against my will. Doing so would make you little better than them.
She tossed her head to indicate their pursuers.
All right, have it your way. I'll try to make it back. I don't know when, but I have a feeling you're going to have a long night out here.
I don't care. I'll be fine.
If you say so. If that wildcat returns before I do, just bang two rocks together. That might frighten him off.
He turned away again. She stepped forward and grabbed his arm.
What wildcat?
The one that holed up in here last night.
How do you know that?
Hunter pointed at the finely ground gravel and dirt on the floor of the niche.
Wildcat scat.
It was rabbit scat, but he didn't think she'd know that. She looked down, frowning.
That's not wildcat scat. You're a bald-faced liar.
Hunter shrugged.
All right.
Still holding the Lamat barrel up in his right hand, he left the shelter of the niche, then began striding along the base of the caprock and the strewn boulders, heading toward the northern end, intending to work his way around the stony crest of the ridge.
Wait for me!
Hunter turned to see Laura step out of the niche and, holding her skirts above her bare, dirty feet, following him along the base of the caprock. She glared at him when she wasn't looking at the ground, trying fruitlessly to avoid stepping on sharp rocks.
Ah!
Hunter looked around cautiously as he continued on.
Ow! Blast it!
Keep it down.
You try walking barefoot over sharp rocks.
You'll soon be towed down if you don't shut up.
Hunter approached the north end of the caprock. He stopped, and Laura stopped behind him. He looked around the side of the rock. Spying no movement in the forest to his left or ahead, he continued walking, setting his boots down quietly.
Ouch!
Hunter looked behind him, glaring.
That one really hurt!
Damn it!
He holstered the Lamat and swung around.
What? What are you doing?
Be quiet.
Put me down.
I said be quiet or I'm gonna put you down and shoot you.
Carrying the angrily chuffing and grunting Laura like a sack of feed grain, Hunter hurried forward along the side of the caprock, peering down the slope ahead and to his left. The branches on the columnar pines didn't start until roughly 20 feet up from the ground, so he had a good view through the forest around him. He spied no sign of his pursuers. He considered returning to the trail, where walking would be easier for his barefoot charge, but quickly nixed the idea. Talon and the others would sooner or later swing back to the trail and run the two of them down. Dead Horse Canyon was only a half a mile or so to the east, straight ahead of him. The canyon ran more or less north and south, so following that canyon, giving him better cover than the trail offered, would eventually bring him near the southeastern outskirts of Tigerville. The canyon was a badland maze of rock, timber, and chalky buttes carved long ago by Dead Horse Creek, which was usually only a slow-moving stream now in the midsummer. Plenty of cover down there, and water. Laura had given up and gone quiet, but it didn't last.
Mr. Buchanan, are we ever going to stop?
As soon as we reach the bottom of the next slope, I'll set you down. But for now, we can't be lollygagging.
Hunter stopped at the rear of the caprock and looked around again. The ridge dropped away before him through more pines and scattered aspen. Green, sunlit leaves glinted in the warm, humid breeze. Spying no movement either to his left or down the slope ahead or behind the caprock to his right, he started forward and stepped in a fresh pile of horse apples.
Whoa!
They bounced and rolled out of control down the hill. She inadvertently kicked him in the temple, and he accidentally rolled right over her. Finally, they both piled up a few feet away from each other at the base of the ridge. Hunter quickly took stock as he lay on his back, facing skyward. He hurt like hell, but he knew how broken bones felt, and he didn't think anything hurt that bad. He turned to where Laura lay a few feet away, also on her back.
You all right? Laura?
He sat up to get a better look at her. She wasn't dead. She was crying. Quietly crying, her face scrunched up, her eyes squeezed shut. Then she raised her head, glaring fiercely through her tears.
I would have been safer with that wildcat!
Hunter spied movement to the east, straight out away from him. A horse and rider were galloping toward him. The rider had a rifle raised, his right cheek pressed up against the stock. Hunter flung himself onto Laura, rolling over her, and flung her behind a tree. A bullet thudded into the ground where she'd been lying a moment before. Hunter threw himself behind the tree as yet another bullet ripped into the ground behind him. The girl sat up, looking around wildly.
Stay down.
As she hunkered low, Hunter looked around the tree. The rider was within 50 yards and angling straight toward him, raising the rifle to his cheek again. Hunter removed his hat, waved it out to the right of the tree, and dropped it. Hunter unholstered his lamat and aimed it. The man had jerked, pulling the reins sharply. The horse tumbled onto him, then trampled him as it scrambled to its feet.
Wait here.
As Hunter scrambled forward, the horse shook itself as though to clear the cobwebs. Its saddle hung down its left side.
Whoa, boy. Whoa, boy.
Hunter approached the mount, holding both hands up, palms out, trying to calm the beast. The horse might be his and the woman's only chance to make it to Tigerville alive. Hunter dove for the reins and grabbed one ribbon, but the horse wheeled sharply and tugged the leather free. Hunter punched the ground.
Damn it!
Laura stared toward the north.
Oh, God!
Hunter looked beyond her. Sure enough, two more of the stage-robbing gang members were heading toward them, coming hard and fast. Hunter scrambled to his feet. He glanced at the fallen rider, who lay still, his body twisted and broken.
One down, three to go.
The two killers were 200 yards away and closing, whipping their horses with the rein ends. Hunter looked around for the saddlebags. He dropped them in his tumble down the ridge. He ran up the ridge, suppressing the aches and pains incurred in the plunge. Fortunately, he found the bags not far away. He slung the bags over his right shoulder and ran 50 feet back down the slope toward Miss Myers, who sat by the tree, sobbing quietly. He stopped beside her, dropped the bags, and palmed the lamat. That's all it took to cause both riders to rein their horses in suddenly. The rider on the right swung down from his saddle, pulled a Winchester carbine from its sheath, dropped his horse's reins, and took a knee. The other man dismounted as well, threw down his own reins, and hefted the rifle he was holding.
Turn over the money and the woman, and we'll let you go, Buchanan.
All right, come and get her.
What?
Don't worry, this ain't my first rodeo.
Grinning, Hunter extended the lamat.
Ow!
The standing man flinched and slapped his hand over the left side of his neck. The kneeling man raised his Winchester. Buchanan slid the lamat toward the kneeling man.
Take cover!
The kneeling man jumped up, just as Hunter's bullet blew up dirt and grass beyond him. Both of the killer's horses had run off, so they ran for the cover of the trees. The Lamat's magazine was empty, but it didn't matter at the moment. They were just out of accurate range. He holstered the Lamat, grabbed Miss Meyer's arm, and pulled her to her feet.
Come on!
Oh, God, no, I can't!
You have to. Those two will treat you a lot worse than I have. Is that what you want?
He ran hard, pulling the unwilling woman along behind him.
No, but... Oh, go to hell!
You're welcome, lady.